So my name is Aki from Reactor Japan, and my title today is Fast and Efficient Tizen HTML5 Mobile Applications. And so by fast and efficient, all right, so this is a fairly specific topic. It's about optimizing for performance. So before going to the optimizement topic, I want to make sure that we are all on the same page about something. And it is the famous quote from Donald Knuth that premature optimization is the root of all evil. And what this just means is that optimizing on itself, it's not the goal. We do optimization in order to reach a good user experience. And I had an experience 8 months ago. I was using the now $900 million app Viber because I met a very beautiful Japanese lady in Tokyo. And I was sending quite a few messages to her through Viber. And after doing this for a while, I guess I exceeded the expectations of the makers of Viber or something, because it started to be really slow. And I start the application, I'm very anxious to see what this girl is sending me, and you know, it takes 2 seconds to load the application. And at that point, I just changed to using something else. So in this case, the makers of Viber failed to make a good user experience just because they failed to match a certain performance target that was in my mind. I'm anxious to see the messages from this girl pretty fast. And this is kind of, that's not premature optimization. That's the kind of optimization we should be doing when making apps. And Tizen is working on many different devices. It's working on cameras, mobile phones, TVs. But what's common for all these devices is that they're somehow restricted devices. So while working on Tizen apps and platform, I've seen JavaScript applications, HTML5 applications for Tizen that load over 120,000 lines of code when they start up. That's crazy much. I've seen actually about 30,000 lines of initializing code being run when the application starts. That's even more crazy. And like, this kind of JavaScript applications just might work on the latest desktop Chrome. Barely. They might work. But they won't work on a restricted device. So when building Tizen apps with HTML5, performance needs to be at least considered in the minds of the developer, or otherwise the user experience is gonna be bad. So that said, my experience is that it's actually not that hard to make Tizen apps run well on the device, as long as you keep it in your mind that this is a restricted device, I'm doing something for embedded devices, and you know, you need to act accordingly. So my presentation is split into three parts. First is about the measurement. I think we all know that optimizing without measuring is kind of a fool's job. So we're first talking about how to measure the performance on Tizen. Then I'm talking about some of the things we've noticed while improving the startup times of Tizen applications. And the third part is about runtime performance, where I mean responsiveness or frame rates when scrolling, these kind of things about the performance. So let's start about measuring. My dad has a farm in Finland. Finland is a pretty cold place. And he's farming potatoes and growing wood. He likes to say, measure twice, cut once, to make the perfect cut on the first time, because you don't want to be out there in the cold doing it twice. This is not exactly true, because my dad doesn't speak any English, because he doesn't have to, he's a farmer. But in software development, the same principle, and especially in optimization, the same principle applies. So when optimizing, you should be measuring very well what you're optimizing, or otherwise it's very easy to go to the wrong paths. And, you know, if we think about this 120,000 line app that I've seen, is I think these developers probably never tested it on the real device. Probably doing this for the desktop browser, where it probably barely ran. It ran, like, okay, well enough that it can be considered okay. But, you know, when measuring the real performance on the device, it's then at some stage going to be a problem. There are three tools that I'm going to talk here about. First one is the WebKit Web Inspector. How many of you have used the Web Inspector? Okay, great, quite many. I'm going to talk about two other tools as well, or one tool called TizenDev, which consists of two parts. It's a tool that our team developed for our needs while kind of building and optimizing Tizen apps. But I think it does a couple of interesting things, and you can be building similar things on your own to fit your needs. So these tools are used to understand where the performance level is currently, where the issues could be, and to build repeatable test sets for measuring performance. Repeatable measurements is the key to optimizing the performance. So WebKit Web Inspector looks like this for those who haven't used it. It comes with the latest WebKits. And you can use this on Tizen. You can run the app on the device and use the remote web inspector from your laptop to kind of, this is the timeline view where we can see what kind of things happen when the page is loaded or the app is loaded. I'm not going to be talking about Web Inspector for long. There are lots of very good tutorials available online how to use the Web Inspector. Just start hacking with it and you'll figure it out soon enough if you're already not familiar. But a bit more interesting topic is TizenDev. It's available as open source in GitHub under github.com/reactor/TizenDev. And this is basically a wrapper for the existing Tizen SDK tools, plus some, for example, X macro and a couple other stuff compiled for the Tizen platform so that you can combine existing open source tools to do first of all, automated deploying of an app. This is just a command line tool. You run it. It watches for file changes. Whenever you change, it redeploys and runs your application. Automated startup timing means you can get repeatable measurements how fast your application starts up to some specified point in the code. And third one is to make automated frame rate measurements, so simulated scrolling. What's the frame rate for certain views in the application. And this wasn't that hard to make. So I'm not actually showing this as something that's really great because it exists, but more of as a showcase that these kind of things you can do and create for Tizen when you're developing. And this provides a good starting point, so I recommend you take a look. For the startup time measurement, what we do, it gives, basically the output looks like this. 30 runs, mean startup time, something milliseconds, standard deviation, something. And what it does, it starts the application, uses kind of the existing SDK and debug tools to start the application, and we build a hook to the application to say that this is the point where the application defines itself as loaded. And both the mean startup time is interesting, but also standard deviation is interesting, especially if you have something related to network connections that you need before your app can be considered loaded. Because by running 30 repetitions of the startup, you can see that is this reliable. If your standard deviation for the startup is very large, it sometimes is very fast, it's sometimes very slow. You probably want to change the application logic so that you do those things that always run fast first, show the user something, and then, you know, do the rest of the stuff later. So standard deviation can be a good indicator that you can change the application structure to being more user-friendly. And the second part of the measurement is repeatable frame rate measurements. Here we use a tool called X Macro. What it does, it simulates X window events on the real device. So we deploy the app, remote control X, using X Macro, and we kind of do repeatable touch events so that it's the same kind of user interaction that's scrolling the screen each time. Because what we noticed is that the scrolling speed affects the frame rates. You know, if you do swipe a bit differently, you get like just unreliable enough measurements that when you try to make the small tweaks to make it better, like you it's very difficult to understand whether your change improves or not. So again, we can do 100 samples, let it do its thing for a while, and get a good understanding if the intended changes are improving or not improving, or even making it worse, the frame rates. So that's the main kind of tools that we have been using: Web Inspector, startup time measurements, and frame rate measurements. And all of these are mostly done on the real devices. So we have emulators, simulators, but my experience is that most of the performance tuning and testing needs to be with the real devices or prototype devices, because the emulator, for example, doesn't give a realistic view of the performance, especially if you're doing anything more heavy operations. If you're doing something very light, the performance doesn't really matter because it's always fast. But when you're doing something heavier than the real device, that's the benchmark that needs to be used. Okay. Then what to do about the startup times if the measurements show that it's a bit too long? And let's start with Captain Obvious. Less is more. If you have 30,000 lines of initializer code, it's going to be slow. So this applies to pretty much everything you can do with your application startup. You should minimize the amount of code loaded, minimize the amount of code executed, amount of resource calls. The less you do, the faster it boots up, and everything. In the end, everything comes down to that, and just choosing what to cut first. But so to be a bit more specific, I'm splitting this to roughly five categories. First one is lazy loading. Second is minification. Third one is avoiding browser reflow events. Fourth one, how to handle the native API calls. And fifth, parallelization that can be done at the application initialization stage. So, lazy loading. If you build a large code base which is all loaded and parsed at the startup time, you're going to have quite a slow application once it grows above a certain size. This is not something that you want to do. This is, in general, a good idea for an application architecture, obviously. But like splitting the code so that you load only those things that are required for the first screen, and load the rest of the modularized pieces later on when you need. Because if you're each view, let's say each view loading takes 30 milliseconds or something, then you load the code. It's when you move to that view, especially if you combine it with certain types of preloading, the 30 milliseconds is just fine. But if you combine 10 of these in the startup, it's 300 milliseconds, which already is noticeable at the startup time. So splitting and making sure the application architecture supports reasonable modules is a very important thing. There's lots of JavaScript libraries that can help you do this. Second simple thing to do is to use UglifyJS or Google Closer Compiler to minify your JavaScript. Because this is a rough figure, but just parsing JavaScript code takes about 1 millisecond per kilobyte. So when you squeeze this with minification, especially in larger applications, you really do save startup time with simple minification. So again, easy step, but worth doing on mobile devices. You think it's coming from local disk, but the parsing and loading it from there still takes enough time that this is worth it. Those are two pretty simple things to do. Reflow is the third thing that I want to talk here. How many of you know what the browser reflow event is? Few of you. So in principle, it's what happens when the browser needs to calculate or recalculate the positions and geometries of the elements on the HTML page. It does this because it needs to calculate where to put these elements to render the page. To render something, it needs to do calculations. And it's either for the whole page rendering or it can be triggered for a part of the screen, depending on what kind of event is triggering the reflow. And there are many things that trigger reflows in the browser rendering engines. For example, when you resize the browser window, that's an obvious one. It has to recalculate the positions, how it's going to render. But also, if you use JavaScript methods that's using computed styles, that's going to cause a reflow because it has to do calculations inside to do that, make that happen. If you add or remove elements from the document object model, that's going to cause a reflow event, at least for part of the screen. If you change elements class, that's also going to trigger a reflow because it needs to consider how to render this. And changing the class can, it can change the size and many, many different things. So browser needs to do recalculations. And you really want to avoid reflow events because it's a blocking operation. When the browser does this, it cannot be doing anything else. It's blocking the user interaction while it's doing reflows. And a single reflow is not a problem, really. It's fast enough. But if you do something repeatedly that causes reflows, you can easily, block the execution for a couple hundred milliseconds or even longer. And that's going to be really visible for the user at the startup. So an example of what can be triggering a reflow. It's the calling of width. This is like the jQuery width of an element because it's using computed styles to calculate this. So we've got this kind of code. We have some list element. We find all like items of the list and loop a function that for each list item, we just set the text of that list item as the list item's width. It's not really doing anything meaningful, but it shows the purpose, the point that you have a list, you iterate of all the elements, and you, for some reason, call the width of each item. And these kind of things can happen when you're constructing your UI. If you're constructing your UI based on some dynamic content, you end up creating lists, doing something for the lists. And in this case, this would be pretty badly performing loop because it's causing a reflow at each iteration. So what we can do is to detach the list from the DOM before running this loop and reattaching after that. Because now we get two reflows, one for the detaching, one for the attaching, but we don't get, if this list is 1,000 elements, we don't get 1,000 reflows. We only get two. And so these two lines are fixing this particular problem quite conveniently. I ran this particular test code on this MacBook Pro. I had 1,000 elements in the list. It took 2 seconds to run this on a desktop computer. And if you switch, you detach, reattach, it's 60 milliseconds. So even on desktop computers, the reflows are quite costly, even more so on the mobile. So then very quickly about native APIs. There's not much you can do about the native API performance on its own because it's provided by the platform. But some of those native API calls take time because they have to look up something from the platform. So you might want to consider, can you build your app so that you can defer the execution of the native calls after you've already shown what's relevant to the user? So boot up the application to a usable state and then go checking whatever you need to go check, if it's possible. Using local storage as a cache, so it's going to be slow for the first time, but if you can cache values coming from the operating system that take time to fetch, you might want to build a cache for these values and assume it's, for example, assume it's not changed, then try to refetch. Okay, if it changed, you can do something. Doesn't work for all use cases, but in many cases, if you consider how the application UI is built, you can make these kind of things. And third part, just only fetch the needed data. In the Tizen APIs, there are different variants of data fetching functions where you can like get everything that's there, or you can get just the specific thing that you want. Using the specific API calls naturally is faster because behind the scenes it doesn't have to go, you know, looking up everything, but just looking up the specific value that you need. And the fifth thing is the simple tip of parallelize. It's easily said and a bit more difficult done. But again, WebKit Web Inspector is your friend here. Look at the timelines here. This is an example from an application. There's lots and lots of calls done in a sequence because it's loading resources sequentially. And if you look at the timeline, it's using something like 200 milliseconds for this whole batch. So by parallelizing this, we can probably squeeze this down to 50 milliseconds or so. Again, quite easy thing to do if you're loading lots of things and can make it do parallel. The devices are most likely having multi-cores, so you want to utilize those to the extent that is possible. And obviously, if you're doing something over the network, this becomes even more important for those calls. So as a recap, lazy loading, application architecture, splitting into modules, minification, avoid the reflow events, be a bit careful with native APIs, and parallelize where you can when you're fetching resources. So final part is about runtime performance. And we all want to get the 60 FPS for the apps when you're scrolling, for example. It's surprisingly visible to the eye if you start dropping. Especially if you drop below 30 FPS, it's going to start looking just crude. So again, this is something that might not be. You build an app, you build a view, it's scrolling fine, you start adding features. At some point, you know, FPS might start going down. So at that point, that's the point where you want to start measuring the more complex view. That, okay, am I still at 60? When you start seeing you're not, you can start measuring and starting to do attempts, okay, why I'm not at 60? What can I do about this? Four categories of things that can affect this. First one is DOM modifications. Second thing is building different kind of preloading structures for your application. Preloading is not about scrolling performance, but it's about making the UI responsive. When the user clicks, how long it takes, you know, to be responsive, show the next view. So preloading can fix these kind of problems, as well as the DOM modifications. So these mostly, these are similar to what you're supposed to do at the application startup time, but kind of applied to loading new views or going different places in the application. And for the frame rates, two main things. First one is to use proper CSS3 so that you can benefit from the hardware acceleration. And the second thing is using right ways of implementing scrolling for your views. So this is a very basic fact of web development in general. The DOM is really slow. You don't want to be doing things to the DOM unless you have to. And interestingly, on Tizen, when we had applications that had multiple views, we were putting just some of those views that are not on screen. If they're like out of the screen but still displayed, it still takes some time for the browser to, you know, be calling this and considering should this be rendered or not. Simply by putting display none to the other views that are not visible was adding 5 to 10 FPS to the scrolling, you know, scrolling performance, because having many of these views, it's just extra overhead. So DOM is slow, meaning modifications are slow, but also having a lot of stuff active in the DOM is slow. Then preloading. For example, image carousels or similar other views where you're swiping. Loading the first screen at the application startup, but preloading at the same time when it's ready, start preloading in the background for the like previous and next view. And when you like swipe there, you can again start preloading. this kind of structures in the application make the user interaction smooth, but it actually also has the benefit of making the application architecture even more maintainable, because it forces you to cut the application to smaller pieces. You need to make these kind of modular pieces to be able to do preloading, because otherwise, if you have one mess, it's very difficult to do preloading. It's very difficult to do lazy loading, because you have everything at the same place. So preloading is a good technique. Then, how to improve the browser? How to utilize the browser performance? Is to use the accelerated CSS3 transitions as much as possible. So, for example, jQuery Animate, which was used a lot in web applications back in the time, still used surprisingly a lot in web applications, but shouldn't be used in Tizen applications pretty much ever. Because you can do it with CSS3, and it's going to be orders of magnitude faster because you can utilize hardware acceleration. Then when using CSS3, there are some things that the browser can accelerate and some things it cannot. So for example, changing the left property of elements usually is not hardware accelerated in the WebKits. But if you do the same with Translate 3D, it pretty much does the same thing. You can move an element 100 pixels left or right. But when you do it with Translate 3D and animate this property, you are going to get hardware-accelerated animation. So it's going to slide smoothly. If you animate the left property, it's going to have a worse FPS. Same goes for changing background color versus changing opacity. So if you want to change, animate, for example, a color of an element. So if you use background color and slide that from one color to another, it's not going to be hardware accelerated because it has to do more kind of more calculation to calculate all the different colors and uploading these to the GPUs. It's going to be just slower. But if you put two layers, the desired colors, you animate the opacity of the upmost color layer, you're going to get full hardware acceleration. And again, it's going to look smoother. And regarding this, there's also one kind of sketchy trick that you can use is to apply a WebKit Transform Translate 3D with 0 pixels to an element. What this does, there's a link, you can find this from my slides, to a discussion in Stack Overflow. Sometimes when you're doing transitions, it's going to start flickering or it's going to like look a bit bad. And what this, what you can do with this is basically force WebKit to create a new rendering layer for that particular element that you apply this, because it's putting it into, you're using a 3D translation. So it's using hardware acceleration, and it has to create a new rendering layer to make that happen. So this can make it smoother for certain types of animations. But also, if you start applying this to all elements, you're going to start noticing a lot of performance problems, because then you're going to have way too many rendering layers. And again, that's not good. So something that can be tried out once in a while to optimize some parts. Another thing is when you start an animation, the user clicks a button and you want to trigger an animation. Let's say a screen should be sliding from one side, setting screen or something. You might want to trigger the start of the animation in the next rendering cycle instead of doing it blockingly in the place. How you do this is basically a set timeout with 0. This is going to be executed at the next rendering cycle. And when you initiate the CSS, initiate the animation by changing the CSS on the next rendering cycle, it can look smoother. And reason being is that if you have code running and you change the CSS right there in place, it might be running still a bit of more code, framework code or something else, and the CSS is changed. But when the browser starts animating, it kind of skips from the animation that amount of time that it took for the code to be executing. So you're going to be skipping the first 20 pixels of the animation. So it's going to look like it jumps just a bit. So this is something that we noticed can help. It's still, it doesn't take that much time. The user won't notice a difference, but it just looks better. Final thing about performance is how to do momentum scrolling. And this, again, is kind of similar to the jQuery Animate, that using iScroll or other JavaScript library to perform the scrolling using JavaScript is, again, very costly, because you're using JavaScript to emulate something that's already native in the browser. And this is something we just noticed with, this is kind of WebKit version specific, but there's two ways of specifying the overflow scrolling properties for elements. You can use the standard overflow scroll, or you can use WebKit overflow scroll touch. And at least for certain Tizen versions, this one is still, it uses a little bit different technique under the hood to implement the scrolling. So it gets you slightly worse performance in most cases. So what we ended up using is mostly WebKit overflow scroll touch, which creates the natural momentum scrolling using the WebKit engine. So recap of these. DOM is very slow, both adding, changing, keeping too much of DOM. All of this is slow. Preloading, very useful technique. CSS3 transitions, specifically those that can be efficiently offloaded to the GPU. Overflow scrolling instead of JavaScript implementations. Just using this, we found it quite easy to create performant views for Tizen. And this is three things. Measuring, then after you know how you're doing, use the tips to get better startup times, check your runtime performance. And like I said, performance is important. You don't want the anxious guy to stop using your application because he doesn't see the messages from the girl he wants to. There are going to be options for other applications, so performance, to some extent, is quite important. Measuring before optimizing, very, very good thing to do. Startup times, main point, minimize what the application is doing. And about the FPS, I wouldn't start measuring the frame rates of all the views in the application from the first point, but just pay attention where it's doing good, where it's doing bad, and if something's wrong, then start measuring and do the necessary things. All right. Thank you.